Hello, this is Susan Smith Nash, and you're listening to the Fringe Journal. I almost said flea market, but it's not really a flea market. It's a series of writings and introspections, and this particular introspection is called Norman is My Glue Trap. Norman, Oklahoma is my personal glue trap. Others might say La Brea Tar Pit, but I'm not feeling grandiose enough to put myself in the league of woolly mammoths or Pleistocene cave goats or saber-toothed tigers. The food chain, I almost typed fool chain, captured as a tableau vivant somewhere in what is now part of the most trafficked section of Los Angeles. I'm not sure why no one has thought to juxtapose the Ice Age drama of hungry animals trapped in tar and then unable to move, witnessing themselves frozen forever, either as predator or prey, with Hieronymus Bosch's triptych, The Garden of Earthly Delights, where human beings are similarly mired in flagrante delicto, pitchforks in hand, eyes open in horror or scrunched shut. That would be quite the juxtaposition, wouldn't it? Anyway, the woolly mammoths were never eaten by the saber-toothed tigers. The tigers did not attack. All died by the same hand, starvation or dehydration, unless they drowned in the tarry stuff. The hot tar that bubbled up like water in a lovely artesian well, but gripped and suffocated and ultimately preserved all who strayed into the warm, gluey depths. What's our personal tar pit? Bosch would suggest desire, the Pleistocene Ice Age climate would suggest hunger. It's like a climate change drama, really, and it suggests hunger, the same sort of thing, I suppose, as desire, but desexualized. But then, I'm not sure what I think. I was once asked to be the loaned executive for the United Way. It was a loaned executive for the United Way, and it was when I worked for Kerr McGee Corporation, a Fortune 500 company, in downtown Oklahoma City. I was flattered, but in reality, they had to go pretty far down the totem pole to find me. I was not an executive. In fact, I did not even qualify for entrance into Kerr McGee's executive dining room. I was working as a business writer in corporate communications, which is something of a miracle because I was more or less an unemployable geologist, not a communications specialist, although I did have a number of English courses under my belt, as well as being 3 hours away from a master's degree in economics. So I did have business somewhere in my kit bag, as well as writer. I was 29 years old. For 6 weeks, I reported down to downtown Oklahoma City, YMCA, where I had a desk in what amounted to a kind of bullpen. No cubes, just a sea of old, horrible desks. I always parked in the same place and walked into the downtown Y and took the rickety elevator or the dark, sweat-smelling stairs to my desk on the 5th floor. Sometimes I had to make my way through a small gauntlet of protesters outside the federal building. It was the Murrah building, and this was a few years before the bombing. But of course, no one knew at that time that its time was limited. I will say that there was definitely not anything to act as any kind of barrier between the street and the front entrance. That was where I went to get my passport. I also went there for some other reason, but now I've forgotten or put it out of my head. I hate standing in lines, especially long ones that terminate with a stone-faced federal employee. The entire building smelled of mold and chlorine, and although I could ostensibly use the pool and the facilities, the 20-yard pool that was chock-full of churning, windmilling downtown worker swimmers filled me with fear and loathing. I had swum competitively for 10 years, and while not very good, I had managed a letter from my high school, and I did win ribbons, and I medaled at the Oklahoma Summer Junior Olympics. I listened to a lot of Jars of Clay, Smith's, Pet Shop Boys, and Nine Inch Nails. I had not yet discovered the Heart Sutra. My idea of staying in the moment or disciplining my mind was to work myself into the deepest, darkest emotional frenzy I could. The descent was giddying at first, but there was definitely no euphoria at being at the cold, fetid bottom of a slick-walled well. No way out. In the end, my team won the award and a plaque for the highest number of donations. My motto was, "No tactic is too low," which meant I spent a lot of time calling corporate headquarters and local branch managers, whom I attempted to bribe with lots of free publicity. It usually worked, and it helped that they were usually well aware of the carnage of the oil bust, which was still going on with no signs of ending any time soon. Oklahoma City was rapidly depopulating. On the surface, I know I seemed upbeat and perky. In reality, I was having a hard time with it all. Every time I had to show the film that featured learning challenged kids and then the song, "A Place for Us," I would turn the other way, my eyes waterfalls of tears. Every time I had to lead tours at the Red Cross and the Donor Bone Center, I would start to faint when they described the process, the harvesting of donor bone from the cadaver, the donor, and the machines that processed the bone. It happened more than once. I would be in the Donor Bone Center, and the American Red Cross representative would be cheerfully discussing the amazingly positive advances, technology, and then they'd fire up the donor bone cleaning machine, and I would, every time, begin to faint. I cringed, felt a sympathetic response in the long bones, arms, and legs, and then watch as the world went black, except for a pinpoint of light. The only way to arm myself against fainting was to go outside where I could not hear the sound of the soylent green machines, the loud whirring and sucking sounds of the bones being prepared for shipping and implanting. Thankfully, I could turn and run, or at least drive, away. The same could not be said for the mice in my desk. I came in late one afternoon, wrung out from fighting traffic, and I pulled out stationery to write a thank you letter for one of the companies that had agreed to let me make "There's a Place for Us" presentation when I noticed the edge was chewed and there was a bit of what appeared to be urine and mice or hamster droppings. The YMCA, as you probably guessed, was later destroyed in the Oklahoma City bombing of the Murrah Building, and it was crawling with mice and other vermin. Just peel off the lids and stick the glue trays in your desk drawer, wherever you expect them to walk before they get on your valuable papers. I poked the glue lightly with my index finger. Ick. Sticky. The glue traps worked. The next time I returned from a couple of United Way A Place for Us presentations, fellow loaned executives were huddled around my desk, voices bright with shock, mixed with pity and horror. "Susan, there's a mouse, and he's dying in your desk." Marquesa had big blonde 80s hair, and I never liked her anyway. She was the only one of the group that was even more shameless than I was at extorting companies into returning the United Way pledge envelopes filled with employee pledges. Yes, a small mouse was indeed writing in the glue, writhing in the glue, not writing. And He was unable to wrench free. The end came quickly when he put his face in it, so death came in a matter of minutes rather than days. If he had been a big ratus norvegicus, with a long, shiny, bald tail, I am sure he would have engendered no sympathy. The tiny little mouse, however, did. As I returned to Norman yet again, and I am here, I stand up to my knees in emotional glue. I wonder if I'm a tiny, cute mouse or a disgusting ratus norvegicus. I know what I consider myself to be. I also wonder if it will take days, weeks, years, or if I'll stick my snout right into the psychological goo, and that will be the end of it. I hear the whirr and glug-glugging of the donor bone machine. Ah, well, no, not yet, I guess. Thankfully, I'm asleep. This is Susan Smith Nash, and you've been listening to The Fringe Journal, and thank you for listening to my reading.